There is more going on than you know. There are unseen universal forces at work. The law of attraction is just one universal law that plays a part in shaping your reality. But there's so much more to know. If you knew how to engage all the universal forces, you could deliberately create the life of your dreams. Joshua, a group of non-physical teachers, explains the laws of the universe and how the mechanisms of physical reality actually work. They are channeled by Gary Temple Bodley, and each week, Gary and a group of students discuss how they are affecting and enhancing their lives every single day. This is the expansion of the law of attraction. This is the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. We're thrilled you're here.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 48 of the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. I'm your host, Gary Temple Bodley. Today is September 17th, 2016. A lot of the stress in our lives is caused by conflict. Why do we feel the need to defend ourselves when this just creates conflict and stress? I think we all know that trying to be right and make the other person wrong is done out of fear. Fear is the real cause of stress. If we can find a way to eliminate or at least reduce the amount of conflict in our lives, then the stress will be reduced as well. But what if your job involves conflict? What if it's your job to fight for something? Today, the question of the week comes from our very own roundtable member, Michael. As you probably know by now, Michael is a lawyer, and he feels like it's his job as a lawyer to fight for his clients. But that brings up a lot of conflict and a lot of stress for him. Let's hear what Joshua has to say about it. On the roundtable today, we have Steve Fenizza. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary.
And Michael Kustin. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary.
And Kyla Hinton. Hi, Kyla.
Hi, Gary.
Hello, everybody.
Hello there.
Hello.
Steve, you're usually on vacation every weekend, so where are you now?
I'm in. I'm on vacation in Canada today.
Wow. You get around.
I do.
How'd you get there?
I took a friend's motorcycle. My house in Orange County, California, 2,000 miles to Winnipeg, through beautiful Yellowstone, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It was wonderful. Fantastic weather. Just super scenic. Everybody's got to check out the Grand Prismatic. Google it. Look at the images. It's amazing. And I was thinking about this. I'm the only person I know of that's gone on three, like, multi-thousand-mile trip on somebody else's motorcycle.
That's true.
Three of them.
Very rare thing to do.
I think so. And I'm about to do another one.
Unless you're part of a biker gang and you took it from somebody.
Right.
That's next on my list.
Where's the next trip going to take you?
Well, I'm going to be going to my high school reunion up in Central California, and I have another friend who has offered for me to test drive his BMW.
Oh.
He's got a very nice BMW 6-cylinder touring bike.
Gee.
That's very powerful, and I always wanted to try it, so I'm going to ask him. He said I could have it for a week, and I'm like, well, maybe I can coincide it with my high school reunion trip.
Yeah.
So that's my intention. We'll see how that plays out.
Sounds pretty
good.
Are
you and your friend going to show up together at the reunion on the bike?
Oh, that would be so amazing.
All dressed in leather.
He's not exactly a thrill seeker. I don't think he'd get on the back. I think he'd be too afraid, but we'll see.
I'm not a thrill seeker either, but I would do it.
Well, I think you are. You went in my Lotus. You're a thrill seeker.
I didn't know what it was going to be like, though.
I think you had a hunch.
That was intense. So how many miles have you been on vacation this year?
Oh, God, I can't add it up.
In Italy?
Oh, yeah. That's. I owe it all to Joshua, I tell you. If you knew me before Joshua, you know, taking a day off, a Friday off, was hard.
Wow.
It was tough because I don't get paid for that Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something else.
It is.
Well, I want to be more like you.
Well, awesome. No one's going to get this, but there's a famous racer. His name is Valentino Rossi.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great T-shirt I saw on Facebook. It said, always be yourself. Unless you can be like Rossi, then be like Rossi.
That's great. So we're going to make one. Always be yourself, unless you can be like Steve. Then be Steve.
Exactly.
I'm going to have those made.
You'll have to start your own line of cologne, Steve.
Okay. I'm up for it. Yeah.
It's like celebrity colognes and perfumes. So we can smell like them.
It'll be smell a little bit like a motorcycle, I think.
Yeah, there we go. We just have an we have some essence of motor oil and essence of gasoline, along with some vanilla or whatever, and musk and whatever else people throw into these things.
I'm going to hire you.
Let's go ahead and do the Joshua quote of the week. Who has the quote?
I have it. Right. Okay, here we go. Stop once and for all comparing yourself to those you think are doing better. No one is doing better than you.
This is a perfect quote because if you guys listen to the Joshua Live podcast, which are now becoming available on iTunes and on Podbeam and soon will be Stitcher and everywhere else, Kate is in the one-on-one and she's one of the people along with Wendy and Kyle and Steve who are in this podcast doing Joshua Live. So Joshua's channel live through me, and then these guys asked a question. Well, Kate just asked a question in writing the other day, and I answered it this morning, and it was all about how she sees, you know, around her all these people excelling at different professions and being the leader and just being so good, and she feels like she's one of the swarm of people, and she's in the middle of the swarm. And Joshua explained that just because you're here, you are out of the swarm. Everything revolves around you anyway. So by being here, you are out of the swarm. But when you go to non-physical, when you return back to non-physical, you will be in a swarm again because you will want to be with everyone else, swarming around, flying around with everyone else. And there is no difference between people because no one needs to stand out because that's all just based out of feelings of unworthiness, and no one sees anyone as more or less worthy. Everyone sees everyone as equal, and everyone is one together. And so this feeling of comparing yourself to other people and using that as the thing that makes you feel less than is a funny thing, especially for Kate, who is living in Paris, who has a wonderful job, who's got a relationship, who's, you know, just spent a couple weeks in the south of France with her mother, grew up in this.
She has a big-ass TV.
She's got a big-ass TV. All she does is look at people she thinks are doing better than she does, and it makes her feel bad. Instead, Joshua said, if you could imagine the billions of people that couldn't even imagine living the life that you live, but instead you're trying to pick these one or two people that you think have it better than you. It's a funny, ironic thing, especially for her. But I think we all do that. We all say, oh, if I could just be like Steve, everything would be great.
Exactly.
You travel.
That's right.
But you never know what's going on inside the people that you think are doing so great. Like, really, would you want to be Donald Trump or Tom Cruise? You know, right?
Well, that's like the famous Edward Arlington Robinson poem. And I'm sure, of course, it's famous and I can't remember the exact name, but it's about this rich guy. He's this wealthy guy. He shimmers as he walks. Richard Corey is the poem. And, you know, everyone admires him. Everyone's jealous of him. Everyone respects him. And the last line of the poem is, Richard Corey went home last night and put a bullet in his head.
Yeah. Ouch. Ouch. Yeah. I don't think you'd feel it, though.
That wasn't the point of the poem.
Right. We got it.
He just went to non-physical. What was wrong with that?
Yeah. Again, that wasn't the point of the poem.
He's like, I'm too good for all these people.
Okay. Right. The English professors listening to this as part of our 6 million listenership, our people are not looking at this from the English poetry standpoint.
Don't you think this is a cool picture Deborah Jo did with this?
Yeah, I like that. Is this a new one?
Yeah, it's a brand new one.
Cool.
It's a palm angel.
And she's jumping in the air because she looks like she's levitating.
I know. It looks like she's flying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
She must be jumping. Is she jumping? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's strings or something. Pretty good.
What a cynic.
I've got to put this
She's flying.
On. She's flying. Sorry. Okay, so Michael wrote this question this week about the stress he feels in his workplace because of all the conflict. And Joshua always says, well, one of Joshua's big things is, you're right, I apologize. And Michael's like, well, that's great at reducing conflict, but what if your job is about conflict and you have to, you know, do things and say things and act in a way in your client's best interest? But I think that what we've realized when we get into your question, Michael, is that the real conflict comes between you and your clients. So I think this will be a fun one to talk about. So do you guys want to get started and pick apart Michael for the whole show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Relish this.
Yes, can we? This is a cruel form of therapy.
Yeah.
Just so you know, yesterday I had physical therapy.
Uh-huh.
And my you know, the person who was giving me the exercises was enjoying every second of the agony that I was going to go through right before he gave me the exercises. Mm-hmm. So I kept on calling him things like Dr. Mengele. I kept on, yes, the fickle finger of fate kept on flying as he was laughing at me struggling. Mm-hmm. At one point I had a kicking exercise where I said, get a little closer, you know.
And what is the physical therapy supposed to be doing?
Well, I've had back issues for a while. I threw out my back a couple of weeks ago, right after I got back from getting Caroline into college.
So when you say back issues, do you mean resistance issues?
Yes, I mean resistance issues.
Okay, now, is the physical therapy enjoyable or painful?
Mostly painful. It's great when they put the ice and the electrodes on at the end.
Uh-huh. Good. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Lily goes through physical therapy for her frozen shoulder, and I can't even be in the room because she's, like, screaming the whole time and crying and all that. And, really? You think this is good?
It's a form of tough love.
Yeah. Okay. So, Michael, why don't you go ahead and read your question?
Okay. Dear Joshua, I need help in applying your teachings to what I currently do for a living. I am a lawyer. A large part of my job involves fighting in one way or another for clients. Boy, was that awkwardly read. While to the... I'm doing a critique of my own letter here.
Usually while the questions are not so perfectly worded as yours.
Unless it's one of mine, right?
Unless it's one of Kyla's, too. Kyla and Michael are the best question writers. Okay.
While to the extent possible, I try to resolve conflicts by figuring out win-win solutions that might meet the needs of all involved, most matters do not lend themselves that easily to enlarging the pie. Often, I have to fight, either in court or in negotiations with attorneys for other parties, to try to obtain what the client is seeking to gain. There is no such thing in my field of simply saying I'm sorry to the other side and giving in order to avoid conflict or putting up resistance. I am paid specifically to fight to get the client what he or she wants, or as close to it as I can get within the constraints of the law and professional ethical requirements. In addition, there are times that clients become unreasonable and demand things that are simply not attainable. One recent example of this was when a client demanded that I go into court, in effect call a judge corrupt and incompetent, and call the judge and the judge's appointee as his mother's guardian, call it. Oh boy, I didn't word this real well, but this is tough when I'm critiquing my own writing.
I know, right?
And say that the mother's guardian was the cause of his mother's death.
So what you're saying is that the client wanted you to call the judge corrupt and incompetent, and the judge's appointee was the cause of his mother's death.
That's
so basically,
right.
The judge caused this client's mother's death.
Exactly. This is not something that I can or will do, as it would be futile, unfair to the judge and his appointee, impermissible as a matter of legal, as a matter of law, and career suicide. As a result, I had substantial conflict with this particular client. Another recent example was when I had to resist my client's demand that, aside from writing in a legal brief how the other side lied about certain issues that were irrelevant, and that my client couldn't prove, even if relevant, that the lawyers, that the other side's lawyer was dishonest and should be punished, when in fact the lawyer had done nothing wrong. In other words, I have to argue and fight not only with opposing counsel, but at times my own clients. Needless to say, these situations add to the stress of my profession. How can I apply your principles of non-resistance when finding the positive in any situation when my first obligation as an attorney is to zealously represent my client and to fight for what they want? I am curious about your take on this. Thank you again, Michael Cutson.
So it's funny because when I get a question like this, it seems totally reasonable. You know, and I'm like, what is Josh going to say? Sometimes I can sort of get what Josh will say. But in this case, I'm saying it seems like, well, Michael, yeah, he's a lawyer. He has to do this sort of things. And then when it all comes out, you go, oh, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. Okay, Kyla, you want to read for Michael?
No, for Joshua.
For Joshua.
Yeah, but it's for my benefit.
Yeah. That's what I meant.
Okay. Dear Michael, you are not fighting. You are playing a game. It's just that this game seems very real to you. You were attached to the outcomes both for your client and yourself. Release your attachments and simply enjoy playing the game. Everything is a game. You could be a boxer in a ring actually fighting your opponent physically, yet it is still a game. You are a boxer because you enjoy the game and all that goes with it. You are a lawyer because you enjoy the game and all that goes with it. Your only struggle is your resistance to the actions and words of clients who you think are unreasonable. If you believed their words were reasonable, you would fully support them. So make a decision.
So that's an interesting thing there, Michael, is that if you thought that the judge was responsible for the death of the client's mother, you might do something. Right. But you think that the client is unreasonable, which obviously he is. Right. And so that's just the resistance to what he's doing because you want to serve him. But obviously he's unreasonable. So you got caught in this trap.
Right.
OK, let's get to the next one.
OK. You will defend a client who has a reasonable issue. You will play the game to the best of your ability. And when you win, you will feel satisfaction. However, when the outcome is something less than you had hoped for, you can realize that you did your best, you played your part, and the universe sorted it all out. That's all you can really hope for.
All right. So your role in these situations is not to be the one that resolves the issue. It's to play your role within this whole scheme of the other lawyer, the client, the, you know, the other person's, you know, who's is either being sued or, suing, and the judge and the court and all that stuff. So you can now take this perspective where you're not solely responsible for how everything comes out. All you have to do is do what you do best, what you enjoy best, and then detach yourself from the results.
Right.
Okay, let's go on to the next one.
If your client, who is far more attached to the outcome than you are, complains or is inspired to speak out based on his low emotional state of being, and you find offense with his words, then you are simply not looking at the situation from his perspective. You are calling him wrong. You are defending yourself when he calls you wrong, and this creates inner stress, inner conflict, and stress on the body. We ask you to release the stress by ending the conflict. Simply say, "You're right. I apologize. I understand your perspective, but there's nothing more I can do." That's all you need to say. This diffuses the situation. You are not making him wrong. You are simply easing the conflict. You are not accepting blame. You are simply empathizing with his perspective. That's all he wants. When you show your power by not fearing an attack on your very fragile and completely false persona, you elevate the vibration surrounding the situation, and everyone will feel it. They will all feel so much better, and from that state of being, they will receive more empowering thoughts and ideas. People believe there is wrong in this world, but there is not. They will hold on to the perspective that they are the victim of fate, but they are not. They do not understand that they create their own reality, yet they do. As someone who can understand the mechanism of physical reality, you can untangle yourself from their lower perspectives. With our love, we are Joshua.
This answer just gives me chills.
Mm.
Because what it's saying is that the clients are creating their own reality. And they come forth, and the result is whatever they need, right? Mm-hmm. And so they, as we know, get what they need. And if the judgment seems to go against them or whatever, it's because this is what they need. This is something that they need. And there's nothing that Michael can really do to alter it other than ease the resistance around it. And I will bet, Michael, that whether you win a case or lose a case, the result of that four people down the road from a different perspective was always for their benefit. But even if it's not,
well,
and you can't see that, but even when they lose, it's for their benefit as well, right? You know, so now for the client whose mother was killed by the judge and his incompetent PT, it was a way for him to release maybe some blame on himself for what may have happened. He can place the blame on others, whatever. There's something he can get out of it. And he's just going to resist the way it all unfolded, but you don't have to be a party to that resistance. And he is obviously, these people are obviously, I mean, anyone who's going to sue people are people who are looking outside themselves for some person to blame or something to place their blame upon rather than themselves. And you stand as the closest person to them. So if the result comes, you know, for something that they don't think is right, they're going to blame you too. It just, that's how they are. Right. And for you, you can just say, hey, it's not me. It's what they have brought forth onto themselves through their approach to life, and they're getting what they need. It's all for their highest and best good. I played my part to the best of my ability, but I do not have to get attached because the universe is going to sort this out one way or the other, and I cannot see from the higher perspective how it's all going to unfold. I just have to have faith that it will unfold. So when your persona is attacked, you have this fear that, okay, there could be some ramifications. I could, you know, have
they
a bad record.
Right, could, they could sue me.
They could sue you. And this is all irrational fear because that's not what's going to happen. You know. So they're not suing you now. You don't have to defend yourself. All you can say is we did whatever we could do under the law, and unfortunately – I see that it didn't turn out to the result that you were hoping for, but at this point, there is no other options that we can pursue. You know, and then if you empathize with their side of it, then they will at least be more reasonable. You know, but I thought that was a great question, a great answer, and a great question.
Thank you.
And it gave me a whole different view of this. And your conflict isn't ever really with the other lawyer, because they're just doing their part as well, and you're playing this game just like a boxer and another boxer.
Right. Although the letter doesn't quite get into it, I've had some serious personal conflicts with certain lawyers too. Not the majority of them,
mm-hmm.
but every now and then you run into somebody who, you know, is determined to, you know, to be nasty
to help you out in a way that you can really see it.
To be nasty, unscrupulous, not
right.
The rules, etc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And realize that that's all for you too.
They're being a mirror to what's going on inside of you. Otherwise, they couldn't even be that way.
Right. They couldn't do it. It'd be impossible.
It's a gift.
Yeah. So this is the approach to life that is the allowing approach. When you see that when someone does something that is jarring and you feel this fear because your persona is being attacked and your ego is trying to defend your persona. But if you could just stand back and go, really, what does this matter? What does this matter? It doesn't matter at all. Nothing's going to come from it. It's all happening for me because I'm attached to this aspect of my persona that I know is not real. I know it's false. So what do I care if my mother says I'm not good at packing the van? You know, what do I care if this person says that I'm not a good lawyer? You know I'm a good lawyer. I've had 30 years of proof that I'm a good lawyer, right? Any judge, if he decides to sue me, anyone's going to say this is ridiculous. We'll see how ridiculous this person is. No other lawyer is going to take his case anyway. I have nothing to worry about, you know. Stuff like that. So all it is a matter of soothing yourself by looking rationally at and proving that this fear is false. Because a fear is irrational. You, even if you got sued as a lawyer, big deal. What's that? You know, you get to spend more time in court, which is what you love.
not as a defendant. No lawyer.
Oh, now you're gonna put restraints on, yeah. on the whole thing. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Michael, how did you feel when you read the answer? Like, what did you think about it?
That's a great question, Kyla. I thought to myself, you know, that's really the way I have to approach practicing law, that this is, you know, I thought the primary portion of the letter was what really resonated with me. You know, to remember that this is all a game.
Yeah.
That's just like a boxing ring. At the end of the day, you know, it's a show. It's like world. It's like professional wrestling to some degree.
Yeah.
Right.
It is a big show, and mm-hmm. no matter how it comes out, the universe isn't going to change based upon this. And yeah. It's a form of entertainment for whoever is involved, and my job here is to do my job
or have fun.
And to have fun doing it.
And to release your attachment to the outcome, because the outcome is not up to you.
Right. You know, it's like a referee in a boxing match, or the judges, you know, where there's no knockout.
So how different would that be to not care if you win or lose the case?
It would certainly de-stress me.
Right.
It would
certainly help your back.
You know, I was going to say that, and help your back.
Right. I mean, I always walk into a case objectively, and I know that there are cases that are, you know, that are going to be extremely difficult to win or extremely difficult to get a good settlement for my client. But even so, there is, you know, I've always had that professional pride where I've got to fight and I've got to get, I've got to claw out that extra bit for the client, or I've got to get, I've got to turn things around for the clients. And part of that is what makes me a very good lawyer. But where it becomes an emotional attachment is where it eats me up.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say that all of that is well and good as long as you're not feeling terrible or stressed out. If you can say, I want to win and I'm going to get as much as I can, and I'll do everything I can, but and still not be stressed out no matter what happens, then that's fine. But if you find yourself resistant or getting stressed out, then you just have to approach it from another angle, because it's the stress that is by far the biggest problem that everyone has.
Right.
And whether, like for a lot of people, it's, you know, coping with stress by eating. That's what the Joshua diet is. A lot of that is about. Or, being angry or whatever, you know. It's the stress that really causes it's actually conflict that causes the stress on the body. And the body is going to tell you that it's facing stress.
Right.
When you're back out and by all this other stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kyla.
Oh, I was just going to say, one of my favorite parts of the Joshua meditations is when they say, there's nothing serious going on here. It's just such a good reminder for me that this is all, it's all just a game, you know?
Yeah.
We're creating.
Yeah, but you have fear, especially if you're in a profession, that you have to get certain things done. You have to get it done on time. You have to get. you have to win for your client, because if you don't win for your client, you're not going to do it. But, you know, that's the backwards way of going around it. What you do is whatever it is you love. And then when you do something you love, it's the doing of it that's the fun part. And the results will take care of themselves. Like, I really like selling houses and showing people houses and going and seeing houses and all the aspects of real estate and doing the research and working with the people and the mortgage and everything. I enjoy it. And the commission at the end is just the logical next step, part of the process. But frankly, I would fix up and renovate houses. I would show houses. I would play poker. I would do all these things, regardless of getting paid or not. You know, and that's when you really allow all the stress to go. I used to have a big real estate appraisal company, and we had, I don't know, 15 appraisers and 4 support staff and all kinds of, you know, structure to it. And we were based on getting a turnaround time of 3 days, which was like the fastest you could do. And so everything was designed for that. And that caused a lot of stress because you think, well, if you don't do what you say you're going to do, then no one's going to order from you and all this stuff. But it turns out that never mattered to anybody. It was all this all the stress that we all put on each other. And I'm yelling at people to get things done faster. And they're yelling at other people to get things done faster. And, you know, and people are working right. weekends and staying up late and not enjoying their lives because of this bullshit idea of getting a thing done in 3 days. They didn't care about that. They cared about being able to pick up the phone and call me and talk to me. That's all they cared about. That's all that business was. So, you know, Lily right now in her business is just booming like you cannot believe it. She's in this area called Antique Row in West Palm Beach. And it's all designers and antiques and shops selling furniture. It's the actual national destination for people to come. Most of her clients live in Palm Beach. It's a big deal, or Wellington or whatever. And a friend of hers came in and said, you know, I haven't made a sale since May. And she's like, I haven't made a sale since 10 this morning. She didn't say that, of course, to him, but that's what she's like, why not? You're kidding, right?
That's great.
So, but it's all, so she'll people come in and they'll bring the furniture. I mean, now designers are having brand new furniture shipped to her from somewhere else, and then she'll have it reupholstered. But she tells them this time when it's going to be done, like it'll be done in 2 weeks. And then she stresses for the next 2 weeks to get it done in 2 weeks. Nobody cares really if it's done in 2 weeks, you know. But she's making this arbitrary time. And that's fine. You can make that time. But if you, like, get stressed out by these promises, you know, where you think you should have to fulfill your promises because you said it, I said, don't worry about it. They're just so thrilled that there's someone they can talk to. That's all they care about. But just like Michael, she's in physical therapy too with this frozen shoulder because she's all stressed out and the body's saying, fucking relax, will you? That's what her body's saying, you know?
Right. Well, on that on that score, thanks to Mr. Finizza, I did begin TM this week.
Awesome.
But I will say this.
Transcendental meditation.
Transcendental
meditation. For us non-hippies. I'm just kidding. I'm heavy.
Yeah, Kyla.
Hey, I'm the ultimate non-hippie of this group.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But you're probably the hippiest person in your law office, I would say.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, but I'm the man otherwise.
Otherwise, right.
Yeah, but getting back to the teachings, you know, it's funny. I have a case that I actually got an extension for putting in my reply papers. And sometimes I get myself worked up about actually doing the work because I'm concerned, you know, there's an underlying concern and stress that I have about whether I'm good enough. Right. whether I can get the result that the client wants.
That is the only reason. The only reason you feel fear when someone makes you wrong is because you have a worthiness issue. Everyone does, right? And if you had not, if you did not have this worthiness issue, nobody could say anything to you that you would ever even react to. If you were totally worthy, if you were Clarence Darrow, you would just look at him and say, don't you know who I am? I'm Clarence Darrow. I'm the best lawyer there is, right?
Denny Crane from Boston Legal.
Yep.
That was William Shatner's character.
Right. So if you were – he wouldn't care what his client said, you know, that sort of thing. So just realize that that's the aspect of it. Very good.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah. And in fact –
think of that.
This case, the clients, there were enough – there's enough bad facts in this case that really, you know, my clients don't fully appreciate how, you know, how tenuous their case is. And I've pushed and pushed and pushed for them to try, you know, to make a serious settlement offer. And they just said, we are going for it. We're going to win. Right. And it's, you know, and I've put the pressure on myself saying, well, Jesus Christ, you know, I didn't invent these facts. These facts are not good. And on top of it, sometimes my clients have said, oh, if you look at blah, 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 you'll see how great these facts are. And then when I looked at certain things that they said were going to be wonderful, they weren't, or they didn't exist. So yeah. I've put the pressure on myself. Right. You know, I still want to please the client.
Only because you have a feeling of that you're not good enough.
Right.
Yep.
So if the client ends up not pleased, that's because they created that for themselves. That's a manifestation event for them, and that's not your problem.
That's yeah, right. And what you can do is just go, I will do my best of my ability. Here is my advice. Take it or leave it.
Right. Yep. Well, and I've told them over and over sure. again, and I've done the speech. I keep telling them, no matter how great a case you think you have, here are the problems, and anything and everything can happen in a court of law. Yeah. And I, in fact, I even brought my associate in to hear me recite this over and over again so that no one can question or doubt the fact.
Yeah,
that
you should video this.
That I warned them.
Video it and put it on YouTube. Right. Here, let me send you a link. In case you don't remember
and again,
what I said at the beginning.
And that result, and that's a lawyer's fear of being sued for malpractice.
Yeah, but that's a irrational fear because the percentage of lawyers that get sued for malpractice is much lower than one would think.
And being sued for malpractice won't kill you.
Right, even if you are.
And doesn't anything happen for you? So if you were sued, wouldn't that be a positive thing?
Yeah.
Maybe you would get to counter sue and you would win. And
or maybe, yeah. Or maybe the judge would go, are you kidding? Michael Cudson, he's the best.
He's the best.
Look at him. Look at him. Unbelievable. You're crazy. And then the other lawyer would say that too.
Become world famous.
Right. So
I mean, the practical reality is, especially in a case like this, my fear is completely unreasonable.
Right.
It is unreasonable because no matter what happens here, if I lose, you know, I've done my best with an exceptionally difficult set of facts. Right. If I win, you know, I'm a miracle maker.
Now let's talk about.
And either way, you're getting paid, right?
Oh, you betcha. Well, the first.
And I think it makes the game more fun for you. I think more real.
Well, it might be. But here's an issue. If the you look at the types of clients that you are attracting, and you can realize that you can attract any type of client that you want.
Oh, yeah.
And so now I only work with buyers who are friends of mine or who are referred by people. No one random comes into my life at all to buy a house. And since then, every deal I've done has been just a pleasure from beginning to end because I'm with my friends or their friends, you know. And it's great.
I've noticed that. I've noticed that too in my job, if you want to call it a job. But so I work in a hospital and I go into rooms and I take pictures of people's babies after they're born. And
then what do you do with those pictures?
I'm supposed to try to sell them, but I'm not really a salesperson, so I just take really good pictures, and people just are dying to buy them when I'm done, you know? But so it's just funny. So when I started, I was at this hospital down where I used to live, and it was just a totally different client base. I mean, there was a whole spectrum, but it was a lot more low income, and it was all – I can see how it was totally based on my vibration. I just happened to move up here, just happened to go to a county where there's this posh hospital where it's all like clients who have their card out when you walk in the room.
What it's a all coincidence.
Just, like, I can see how it's just based on my vibration. Even the people that, you know, maybe are up here but can't afford the pictures, they're still just so great because I'm just there – to have fun. I'm just there to play with babies and take good pictures and talk to these moms who've just given birth to like human beings, you know? And
you're like an expert at giving birth.
I do have a little bit of practice, you know? but yeah, so I just have a blast. And so I can't remember the last time that like I had a bad session. Whereas when I first started the one-on-one, it was a lot more bumpy. You know, I had a lot more like drama at my job than I do now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anyway, everyone should think about who their clients are and who they're attracting and why they're attracting this type of person.
Right.
And if it's bumpy, well, there's something in your vibration, not theirs, because you wouldn't be a match to them if you didn't need them. Pretty interesting stuff.
You know, and most of my clients, just so you know, are very easy to, you know, I shouldn't say most, a good chunk of my clients are very easy to deal with, are very reasonable or very rational. But there are some that I've attracted into my world who, who are very combative and like to make things difficult. And I feel sometimes not only for the other side, but also for their own attorney.
Yeah.
And by the way, most attorneys I know who deal with, you know, especially estate litigation matters or contested guardianships, which are family oriented wars, feel exactly the same way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a segment of the law that you chose to do, which is one of the most stressful possible segments. Mm. Divorce and this, I guess, would be the two most stressful and criminal defense. You could be a real estate lawyer and just have an easy time of it, but it'd be boring.
Yeah. I was going to say,
heard about the close, the wars in the closing room.
Never. Yeah. I mean,
maybe not in Florida.
Once in a blue
moon.
Maybe
not for Gary.
By the time it gets to the closing, it's always resolved. Yeah. I mean, earlier in my career in the 80s, there were a couple times like that. But I swear to God, not in the last 20 years has there ever been an issue. But anyway, Michael, before we go on, and I forget about this, tell us how your experience with meditation has been.
Meditation's been really interesting. I'm being a good camper. I'm doing it 2 times a day. I still feel a little resistance when I start in the, why am I doing this? Am I going to be able to get myself into it? You know, could I be doing something a little more fun or whatever? But once I get into it, I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've had varying experiences. Sometimes when I do it later in the day in particular, I fall asleep. And as part of this process, I've been told that that's perfectly natural. And in fact, that's what my body needs. And that's the process. This morning I did it and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to stick, you know, it's, as Steve knows, it's a mantra practice and I was able to stick with it. And it was... it was a very soothing, calming practice.
I know that when I first started doing it, it was very hard to go for more than a couple minutes in the beginning. And it took probably a month before I could do the whole 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've meditated on and off for years.
Yeah.
But I've always had, you know, and sometimes I've been able to do it with a guided meditation. Other times I've tried to simply follow the breath or do some sort of, OM or some sort of mantra meditation that I found online or that I read about. This has been the longest I've been able to do in any particular, span of time that I've been able to do the meditation. So it really does work. So I really want to see, maybe a month from now, how much more developed I've become both as a meditator and as a calmer human being.
Right. Yeah. And so do you do it for 15 minutes?
It's 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay. Great. Wow. Yeah. Excellent. And it's all just you in silence?
Yeah. You do the mantra in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a particular way that they teach you how to do it. So,
and where do you do it?
Wherever I can, including the train.
Okay.
Nice.
And do they still tell you that not to share your mantra with anybody?
Oh yeah.
So, what's your mantra, Michael? You can tell us.
Work.
It's just the four of us here, and
6 million people listening.
Yeah.
It's the F word, Gary.
See, this is probably the same mantra for everybody, but because we don't share it, we don't know it.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought about
it's like
that,
the secret
actually.
Handshake. It's the same handshake for everybody. Well,
but so far so good.
We have a group of Joshua meditations. The first one was the abundance. The second one was joy. And we just did the relationship one this morning, which is awesome as well. They're all fantastic. And Kyla is the narrator. She's brilliant at it. but Lily and I have been doing the abundance meditation now for about 2 weeks. And we've had a bunch of things happen to us. But I don't know if I told you this. So last Saturday after the show was the big Players Championship poker tournament. And so I came in second in that one and won $6,500. And then the next day was another tournament, and I came in fourth in that. And then on Monday night was a tournament. I won that one first place. And then Tuesday was a tournament. I won that one first place.
How many people in the first place ones?
So the tournament, the big tournament on Saturday, there was 161 people. And the other tournaments had around 80 or so people in them.
So now when you walk in, are they all fearful of you?
Oh, they always are. They always, I mean, this is, you know. but to win four in a row like that was just something else. People are like,
you must have gotten over your shit with the valet or whatever the guy at the desk, the front desk that you
were talking about. And he was actually there one of the days. So I'm over him a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he was, in fact, your good luck charm.
That's right. Or maybe, just maybe, there's no such thing as luck, and I just was able to reach the vibration of abundance, and this was the way that abundance flowed to me.
I think when they find out about this podcast, they're going to ban you from the event.
So there's a guy.
Advantage.
I don't know if I'd tell you this. A guy there, Richard, who's an older guy and super nice and plays all the tournaments, and we're friends, and nobody knows about me except a couple people. And he goes, so the other day when I was just doing well, he goes, so what are you doing? You're just visualizing the cards you need? Is that how you're doing it? And something like that. And he's like, you know, I know all about you. I know what you're up to.
I know your secret.
I know your secret. Oh, okay, great.
Well, you could start
it's like Rain Man. I'm counting cards.
You can start your own poker spiritual training.
Yeah. I hear, like, I'm really into watching all the poker on TV and stuff, and the two of the most winningest poker players in the world are, when you hear them interviewed, they are both talking law of attraction stuff all the time. And they're talking about intention and visualization, and they're talking around it. And then I was watching the National Heads Up Championship, which was like 2010. And this girl who's an actress, who is, I can't remember her name, really beautiful girl. She had gotten really into poker, and she specifically said, I'm using the law of attraction to win these games. And she went all the way into like fourth place or something, which was unbelievable that an amateur could do that. And every time they interviewed, she goes, yeah, I'm really into law of attraction, and I've been using, you know, these principles to get where I am. You know, they just looked at her dumbfounded, didn't know what she was talking about, really. But it was amazing.
That is something else.
Yeah. So it's this whole thing of, you know, letting go of the outcome in order to not create this wobble in your vibration, right? Because if you are attached to this outcome, then if something happens that appears like the outcome's not going to come for you, then you get this fear. And the fear puts you in a lower emotional state of being. And from that point, you just don't have access to the ideas and this, you know, thoughts that are empowering. You just get these thoughts to just fix. For instance, if I allow the tournament to unfold, I'll be inspired to act when inspired. And I pay close attention to this. Yesterday it happened twice where I looked down and first time I said, I know I have aces, and the second time I know I have kings. And both times I had aces and kings. And I just got this idea. And I guess, you know, you have a lot of thoughts coming to you, but from me, for meditation, it slowed down the thoughts, and I can sort of pick apart, and I can look and have a feeling for what someone has. But anyway, if something turns out that you lose a hand, then you can – and this, you go on what's called tilt. You know, like last night, I was in the hand and I had a guy went all in and I thought about it for a while and I called him with ace queen. He had ace four. And I was going to knock him out and get, you know, a huge stack at this point. And he gets a four on the last card, the river. And so he ends up winning the hand. And by seeing this as a wrong thing, it drops you into this lower emotional state of being, which is called tilt in poker. You're on tilt. You get people on tilt all the time. And a lot of people do it on purpose, you know. And then if someone's on tilt, you see them making stupid decisions just so they can win a hand to feel good again, right? So they'll do things much riskier than they should just in the hopes that they could win this hand and feel better because they feel so bad. And they have this urge to do something to feel better. So almost all the time when someone's on tilt, they'll play the next hand. And you can really take advantage of those types of people. It happens to everyone. So this is the whole illustration of that point is when something you think or appears to be going wrong based on your attachment to this outcome, then you feel this fear and then you knock off your whole vibration of the whole thing. But if you don't have any attachment to the outcome, then it really doesn't matter what happens because you know that whatever's going to happen is the thing that works out. Now, try telling that to a normal person and they're going to say, oh, well, that's just fine. You can say that the outcome is going to be perfect no matter what it is. Well, isn't that convenient, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. And if it turns out wrong, well, that's a good thing. But you just have to have sort of faith that that's how it works because that's just the design of this universe.
And technically, if you enjoy playing poker, it really shouldn't matter, right? Because you're playing poker. So it shouldn't matter if you win or not.
Right. When it came down to me and my friend Mike, it was really fun. This whole tournament was great because there were so many people. And this is a championship, so it's all the people who were in the Player of the Month. There's over 1,000. There's like 1,800 people throughout the month. And the top 100 get a free ticket to this event and end up other people come to play with it. And this one pro came, and he's a pretty famous pro named Andrew, and he just had a monster stack the whole time, and he was just pushing everyone around. And it comes down to the three of us, and normally when it comes down to that point or to any final table amount, you do a chop. So you take what's left in the prize pool and you divide it. And so there was going to be about, I guess, $4,000 each if we chopped it. And he, at that point, and he said that he would chop it if he got $8,000, right? And everyone else gets now $3,000 or whatever. And so we're like, no, we're not going to do that. Because first place was
$10,000. Sounds like deal or no deal.
Yeah. Okay. And he was justified in saying that he did have a monster stack. Well, it gets down to three of us. And then my friend ends up winning a big hand against him and then knocks him out the next hand. So he ends up getting $4,000 instead of, you know, I guess we were 6,000 he could have gotten at that point. And so now it's just the two of us. And the last hand, I have 6-4. And so I call, and the flop is 10-6-4. So I have two pair. So I check, and Michael goes all in. And I call, and he's got a 10 with a deuce, and I have two pair. The next card is a deuce, so he has two higher pair, and he ends up winning the whole thing. And that didn't affect me at all. So here, technically, I lost $4,000, but it was so fun. The tournament was so great. I was happy with what I got. I would have been happy with anything, really. It didn't really matter that much. And just the fact that we knocked out another guy and got up, and it was and so the enthusiasm of actually getting the cash wasn't any more fun than playing the tournament all day long. It was just another part of it, right? And the only time you get upset in a poker tournament, or probably anything, selling a house, is when, you know, the outcome isn't what you wanted. But if you can release yourself from the outcome, then you can enjoy doing what you do. The problem is, if you don't enjoy doing what you do, then the only good part of what you're doing is the outcome. Is the money or whatever, the credit, the prestige, the status. But I don't think that many people are really struggling with what they're doing. I think that most people enjoy a good part of what they're doing for a living.
I know this wasn't the point of your story, but I can't believe you played 6-4.
Okay, well, so there's two people left, right?
Unless you were the big blind.
I'm in the big blind.
Poker critique here.
Yeah. So I'm in the big blind, so I can't fold a 6-4, right? There's just two of us here. I have to play it. And so, and a 6-4 can get a straight and can get a, you know, flush, whatever. A 6-4 is not that bad against any other random hand. So it just turned out that I did flop two pairs, so I had this monster hand at that point. And then I allowed him to go all in. And
you allowed him. That was so nice of you.
No, I did, man. I said, oh, I don't have anything. I check. I'm all in with my 10 deuce. You know, here you are, sucker. You just lost. And then deuce on the turn. You know. Yep. So that was that.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing you in the World Series of Poker.
Yeah, me too. And I have to get my vibration up to that level.
What's the purse on that one if you win it?
$10 million or something is the prize pool. So I think the winner's going to get in the $6 or $7 or $8 or maybe $10 million range.
That would be nice.
Yeah,
I'm going to do what that actress did, and I'm going to law of attraction my way through it, and I'm going to knock Gary out.
I think you did. You have to, you know, her name was Shannon Elizabeth, by the way.
Oh,
Shannon Elizabeth.
Heard of her. Wasn't she in the American Pie movie?
Yes, she was.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
She's cute.
Yeah. And, you know, she didn't need the money that she was going to make on the tournament. She just wanted to play the game and see how she could manage her vibrations through the whole thing. We should send her a book. Put that on your list, Kyla. We'll send her a perception reality book.
All right.
Just say... the guy who wrote this book is a great, you know, is a avid poker player, and he saw you on the National Heads Up Championship.
You should just do a book on spirituality for poker players.
Mm. Yeah,
just gear it towards them.
Half the people would believe it, and half the people would say it was nonsense. It's interesting how many people in poker are, you know, into something that can give them an edge, but they're all really. You know, the really, 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 if you watch poker, the really good ones aren't really attached to an outcome. Nobody gets upset when they lose a hand. Nobody gets upset when they bust out. And in our level, people get really pissed off when they lose a hand and really pissed off when they get knocked out and really excited when they win a hand. But if you watch really good poker players, their emotions don't move with what's happening. It has nothing to do with it. They keep really calm and steady.
Interesting.
Yep. So, did you guys enjoy this show?
Yes.
I did.
I did too. Thank you for your question, Michael, and thanks for letting us talk about it.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Well, I promised last episode that I would do so. So, it was my pleasure.
Good. If you're hearing this now, you will have realized that the weekly question of the week is coming on Sundays now instead of Saturdays, so that we have time to finish up this podcast and have it ready for when it comes out. So, Kyla.
we have time to do that, right?
Yeah. So, I love when someone says we, Michael, are going to be doing something. That we always means me.
So, when I say we, I mean Kyla from now on. Kyla, you have to put this together so it's ready for tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock a.m.
Oh, Lord. I can do that. It's 11:11 right now, so that means that I am in alignment. And I.
Oh, good.
Angel numbers. The universe is absolutely smiling on you, Kyla.
Good. I'm smiling on it, too. I can do that.
And the angels of the internet are helping you to get this done quickly and efficiently.
I appreciate them.
My persona wants credit. I have to convert this to an MP3 and upload it.
There's some Steve in there, too. That's right, Steve.
That's right.
He's in the recording and the MP3 conversion.
But maybe I'll just teach Kyla, give her all these tools and...
Delegate. That's what I always say. Delegate.
Then I'm going to have to find somebody to delegate to.
You can. Go to Elance and hire whoever you want.
I actually, this is the stuff that I really enjoy, though. I like doing the production part of it. So.
Good. Okay, excellent. So you do your thing to it, and everyone's going to get their email tomorrow on Sunday now, and then they can just, instead of getting two emails a week. Also, the Joshua Live podcast, if you guys want to listen to that. That's
lots of listens or downloads or whatever.
People are downloading it already?
Yeah. There's fantastic. Like 150 or something downloads already.
Well, out of 6 million, that's pretty miserable, but, but nobody knows about it yet.
You're looking at things from a limited perspective, Gary.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, goodness.
It's 12:12 right here.
Yep.
All right. So how much time do we have left?
It's been an hour, so we're good.
Oh, good. Right. All right. Well, I'm going to go and win another poker tournament. I have now launched myself from 33rd in the Player of the Month to 4th. And I'm right behind 2nd and 3rd. So with another win today, I should move up to 2nd. And I'll keep everyone posted because I know you're thrilled.
Definitely.
You're hanging on the edge of your seats.
Yes.
So thank you all for coming.
We are all rooting
for
you.
Listening. Thank you, Michael, for sharing your question. If anyone has a question to send to Joshua, go ahead and send it. I'm doing about 5 or 6 from the general public, and the rest are from the people who are in the one-on-one program. And then we're getting closer to having the Joshua Diet released, and we're doing lots of other things, meditations and stuff, so there's lots of content coming. So I hope to hear or see or talk to you all next week. Until then, have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. Remember, you are loved more than you can imagine, by more than you could ever count. We'll see you next week.